So our first sermon series of the year is about the sovereignty of God, and I let you guys know last week that God really put this sermon series in my heart in the fall. And just kind of contrast that, you know, the first sermon series isn't going to be about all these things that we're going to do, these resolutions, these things we're going to get intentional about, but we're going to focus on really the key for that happening, which is banking all of our hope and our trust in the sovereignty of God. And as the people of God at Heritage, we must deepen our trust in the sovereignty of God over our marriages and over our families and over this church. And by deepening our trust in this sovereign God, he'll be able to have his way with us. Like we learned last week, God is a sweet and a sovereign shepherd, and we need to follow his direction no matter where he may lead. No matter if it's mountains or whether it's valleys or green pastures, we are sheep and he is shepherd and he knows where he is leading us. And today marks a day where Heritage membership will have to make a decision after church to be able to trust in the sovereignty of God or just to keep trusting in the way that we have always done things in the past. Today begins the first step of deepening our trust in God's sovereignty in 2016. We must have this experience of being satisfied by sovereignty. And that's the title of this morning's message. Think about it this way. Experiencing God's sovereignty is like going out to eat. And I love to use food metaphors and illustrations. There are some of us who are content with going to the same restaurants over and over and over again. And then we get there and we order the same thing every single time. I love going to Carrabba's. It's probably my favorite Italian restaurant. And I order the same thing over and over and over again, the filet Brian. If you haven't tried it, it's good. This year, God is calling us to try something new. And for many of us, the risk and that newness, it scares us. It scares me. But this is why we are focusing on God's sovereignty. Because if God is a shepherd, and if we are sheep, and if he knows where he is leading us, we can trust. We may see a mountain coming up ahead, a valley coming up ahead, and say, our sovereign God knows. He is a shepherd. He sees things that we cannot, and he wants us to be satisfied in himself and his leading and what he is doing. So think about it this way. Let's go back to the food metaphor. So we're out at dinner. We've been ordering the same burger every single time that we go out to eat. Give me a burger, cheddar cheese, mayonnaise, ketchup, some pickles. That sounds pretty good. But this year, and we've been dining on these burgers for a while now, but God wants us to try something new because there's a new steakhouse in the area. And I know it's not usually where we eat. We go to the burger joint and I get that cheeseburger. But if you would take the risk and if you would try it together, we'll find out that we'll be able to experience the sweetness of the sovereignty of God that we have never experienced before. We're going to try something new this year as a church, not for our sake. It's not for our vain glory, but it's for his glory. And I believe that as we risk and as we sacrifice in the songs that we sing this morning, as we follow him, we'll see that we will have experienced God in the sweetness of satisfaction like never before. And this is what 2016 is going to be about for us as a group at Heritage. But this means that we're going to have to give up on some of our preferences, some of our own choices for what God wants for us. I know that we've been going to that same burger joint for a while, but I'm confident that if you just go to that new place with me, that you would sit down, go into the restaurant, pick up the menu, try something new, that you will be satisfied because it's ultimately God who is feeding and nourishing us. And in doing so, we will find that God has become our singular focus. So here's the proposition this morning. The proposition is that God must be the treasure that consumes the affection and the attention of the Christian. This is a bold proposition that I put before you this morning. You are going to be challenged this morning to think about and to consider what are those things that you look at all the time? What are the things that you allow into your heart? Because in order for your personal life, for your marriage, for your family, and for this church to grow into what God desires, Jesus must become the treasure of your eyes and of your heart. And when this happens, I believe that God will do over and above anything that we can expect in our lives, individually and corporately in 2016. So this morning and next Sunday, we're going to be tackling Matthew chapter 6. And Matthew 6 is in the middle of what's called the Sermon on the Mount. So after news of Jesus' initial ministry spread around Galilee, people just flock to him. And he uses this opportunity to sit his disciples down and to teach them, because he knows there's this larger crowd watching. So today's text comes after what's called the Lord's Prayer. And if you were to look at the Lord's Prayer, it is bookended with the sovereignty of God. So let's go ahead and let's read our text together. So we're going to be in verses 19 to 24 this morning. So I'll read it. It says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in or steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. So then, if your eye is clear, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light that is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters, for he will either hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth." So our text is broken up into three sections that we're going to plow through together. It addresses the heart. It addresses the eyes, and then it addresses who we are mastered by. And my hope is that we will become a people that would not be mastered by our pursuit of wealth, but that we would become a people who relentlessly pursues God above all. And that's the very first step of that new vision statement that was introduced in the fall, that we would be a people who would relentlessly pursue God. And I pray that God would provide for all of your needs this year, so that we can trust him as wealth is unleashed for his sovereign purposes at Heritage and Branchton and the new Tampa community. So let's start with the heart. Let's go to the eyes so that we can see what is it that truly masters us by the end of the service. So point one is this, is that treasures reveal what you trust in. Treasure is a metaphor for what you value. What is it you put stock in? What's important to you? And identifying the treasures in your life will show you what you trust in, what brings you pleasure, what makes you tick. Ultimately, God wants us to be a people that finds our treasure in him. God wants us to treasure his son above everything else, above that spouse, above that child, above that house, above that new car, above everything. We're going to start actually at verse 21, and then we're going to go backwards. We'll go back to 19 and 20 and kind of see this kind of cause and effect thing that's going on here. Verse 21 says, "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." So here's the principle. Your heart follows your treasure. Treasure is about what you desire, the things that you put your trust in. What you treasure is what holds the affections of your heart. And the word for treasure that's used here just literally means a deposit. Go into the bank, putting something in there, and it stockpiles, keeps amassing. It's a reference to one's wealth, one's savings. Whatever it is that you are working towards day in and day out in your life, that thing you're trying to build, that's where your heart is. So let's go back to verse 19 now. Jesus says in verse 19, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal." Now, Jesus does not condemn our desire or our tendency to treasure things. This is how we were designed. We were designed to be pleasure cravers, to find satisfaction in something. The original intention was for us to find it in God. But as we've studied in life groups, we messed it up. Now our tendency is to elevate ourselves and find satisfaction what we want instead of what God wants. But Jesus wants us to treasure that which can truly satisfy the soul. Now the phrase that's used in verse 19 for store up, it's almost the exact same Greek word, but it's in verb form. It literally means to stockpile, to save up, to amass. So Jesus tells his disciples to not amass their treasure on earth. And the reason for this is that earthly treasures are temporary. Jesus says that moths and rust, they can come in and destroy this earthly treasure. Now, the Greek word that's used here for rust is a much stronger word than what we think of when we think of rusting. It literally means to be eaten up. All earthly treasures are perishable. This is the point. They're temporary. They do not last. Earthly treasure will eventually be consumed, and whatever it is that the thing is that you put your desires in, it is going to corrode. This is why our call as Christians is to be consumed by God, because he isn't temporary. He is eternal. Those treasures, they're here today and they're gone tomorrow. Earthly treasures are not secure. And this is why Jesus says in the rest of the verse that thieves, they can break in. They can steal these treasures. And if they do, then you have nothing. So, if Jesus tells us to not store up and amass these treasures on earth, what are we to do? And verse 20 tells us, he says, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroy, and where thieves, they can't break in and steal. We are to stockpile and amass these heavenly treasures. But what does this mean? What's a heavenly treasure? It means that we need to pursue the things that God takes pleasure in. If God is eternal, and then the things of God are eternal by implication, those are the things that we need to seek. So what does God take pleasure in? God takes pleasure in the things that are done for his glory and for our good. So his pleasures must become our pleasures. His motivations must become our motivations. We should seek pleasure in the things that bring God glory, because that is our ultimate good. And these heavenly treasures, they are infinitely superior to earthly treasures. These treasures offer us something earthly treasures cannot. They're indestructible. They cannot be destroyed. They cannot deteriorate. They cannot decay. They cannot be stolen. And they can't be taken from our lives. Living your life for the things that God, for the things of God, brings pleasure that is eternal, indestructible, and secure. So the question is, what do you treasure? Think about it for a moment. What are you pursuing? We were all created to pursue something. The answer to these questions will tell you where your heart is. So here's a scenario for you. Are you more willing to buy yourself something you want or to give towards something that God desires? These questions will reveal what you truly treasure. And if God is not at the center of that question, you're pursuing something that's not going to last. And it means that you're not satisfied by God's sovereignty. And here at Heritage, we want to come alongside you in this life journey with God, this Godward life that God has you on, so that you can learn how to relentlessly pursue God, no matter the highs, no matter the lows. We want to help people find their ultimate treasure in God. That's why we exist. If this is your desire, will you join us as we move into 2016, as we pursue corporately what God desires for us at Heritage? Here's a second point. The point is that perception influences what you desire. What you allow through your eyes and into your brain, it influences you. To put it plainly, what you look at becomes what you desire. And then Jesus just said, your heart follows your treasure. So start putting this together. If you continually put yourself around insufficient treasures, earthly treasures, you're going to desire those things. There's a reason why I do not walk into Best Buy. Yesterday, we're over at the Grove. We went to Dick's Sporting Goods to get some stuff for Aubrey for softball. I even bring up, hey, T, let's go into Best Buy. I have wanted a new TV in the house for about 3 years now. The bulb, the lamp in the TV is broken like a year and a half ago. I replaced it. Perfect opportunity to get a new TV. I crave a new TV. I am not foolish enough to know that I can just walk in the Best Buy, look at all those 60-inch Sony UHD TVs, and not desire it. That's not how we were designed. Our perception, what we look at, becomes what we desire. So I have to expose myself to things that are for God's glory, not just for my own personal enjoyment. And it is a discipline, and it is so hard, and I can rationalize and justify all that I want for why I need this new TV. I really do. No, I don't. Let's take a look at verse 22. Verse 22 starts off by saying, the eye is the lamp of the body. We need to understand this metaphor. The eye is a lamp. And the word for lamp literally means something that illuminates, something that brings something to light. So the eye brings light to the body. It illuminates the body. So on a spiritual level, because we're in metaphor here. The eye illuminates what's going on with the body. What the eye looks at impacts the body. So the body is a symbol for what the flesh desires, what you yearn for, what you want. Jesus makes a conclusion based on this truth, and he says, so then if your eye is clear, your whole body will be full of light. And the word for clear here means to have a singular focus. If your singular focus is to pursue that which glorifies God, then your body will be full of light because your body follows your eyes. And this phrase, full of light, literally means to be shining, to be radiant. So the principle is this, your body follows your eyes. And it's related to the last principle that your heart follows your treasure. What you look at becomes what you desire. So the question is, what are you looking at? When you take your phone out every single day and spend the countless hours that we do on it, what are you looking at? When you're watching TV, what are you looking at? Those are the things that becomes your desire. So beware what you spend your time looking at, because you're going to desire that. It's how we were crafted as humans. So if you're not desiring God, the question is, are you looking at him? Are you exposing yourself to him? Are you looking at his word? Are you putting yourself around God's people? Let's keep going to verse 23. Verse 23 kind of takes the contrast to it. It says, but if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. Remember, the eye is a lamp. It goes both ways. It illuminates and it sheds light on what's going on with your desires. So what happens when the eye is bad? And here's the reality. Before Christ, on a spiritual level, all of our eyes are bad. This just means that we desire and we have this tendency to elevate and want to fulfill ourselves before we live for God. On our own initiative, if we had the choice to put our eyes on the Bible or to put our eyes on someone we love, a sporting event, a TV show, our natural tendency is to pick that other thing every time. The theologians call this total depravity. We have this tendency to value self and what we want every time before God. And we're learning about this in our life groups. When we study the Garden of Eden and the impact of the eye, when Satan comes to Eve, talks to her about this fruit and what God said or what God didn't say, the text says that she saw that it was a delight for the eyes. You can go back and take a look at it. And then when she ate it, Moses says that her eyes were opened. What we look at reflects what we desire. Now, this phrase that Jesus uses in verse 23, full of darkness, it literally means to be opaque. You can't get through it. You can't see through it. And Jesus finishes his thought on the eye by saying, how great is the darkness? This is our spiritual condition before Jesus came into our lives. Our eyes are attracted to the things that we want instead of what God wants, and our body follows along with it. And as Christians, we should be setting and fixing our eyes and our gaze on the things of God, because if we do, our body, our desires, the things that we crave, it's going to follow. So then Jesus takes this discussion in the heart and then the eyes, and then he goes straight to the heart of the matter, which is, what is it that truly masters us? What should satisfy the Christian? What should our hearts desire? What should our eyes look at? Let's look at our final point. And here's the point. It's that affection for money contradicts devotion to God. During this point, I'm going to have to spend some time challenging you, because this is what Jesus is doing right here in the text. There is a temptation for every Christian. We still deal with a sinful body, even though we follow after God. And our tendency is to want to be satisfied with these things of the world instead of God, because they're immediate. We can touch it. We can feel it. We can taste it. Let's look at verse 24. Jesus says, no one can serve two masters, for he will either hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to one, despise the other. And then the bold statement, you cannot serve God and wealth. Now, the term for wealth here is the Greek word mammona, which is where we get the English term mammon. Some of your translations may have said it. It's an umbrella term that signifies the stuff of the world, the money, the possessions that become the objects of our affections. Jesus tells us that the human heart doesn't have the capacity to serve two masters. We weren't created that way. We got to pick one. We have a decision to make. We cannot serve both God and we cannot serve mammon. We can't serve wealth. So we have that decision to make. We can use wealth for our purposes, our selfish desires, or for God's purposes. Now, God is not saying that you cannot use wealth to provide for your basic needs, for your family's needs, or even to do some over and abundant things for those that you love. This is not what he is saying. What he is saying is that we should not be fixated. We should not be fascinated by mammon. It shouldn't be the bottom line, singular focus of our lives. Wealth should be used for God's purposes. We shouldn't treasure wealth. It shouldn't hold the affections of the heart. Why? Because we can't serve two masters. The Greek word for serve that's used here in the Greek literally means slave. So we're not to be enslaved to wealth. We should be slaves to God because Ephesians says that we were bought with a price. We were bought with his blood. So we shouldn't be slaves to wealth, driven by it. Because here today, gone tomorrow. And we show our devotion and our affection for God by allowing him to use our wealth for his glory and for our good. Because it's all his anyway. And anything else is contradictory to being devoted to God. In verse 24, Jesus talks about hating one, loving the other, being devoted to one, despising the other. And these words are so extreme in Greek. The word for hate literally means to detest. And the word for love is agape, that highest expression of love that God has for himself, for his son, and he calls us to have for each other. Being devoted to God means rejecting money from holding the affection and the seat of the affections of the heart. Being devoted to money means that you've rejected God to be able to sit and to hold the affections of the heart. There's no middle ground for Jesus. Only one thing can hold the affection of the heart of the Christian. It's going to be mammon or God. Which one? And when your heart and when your eyes are aligned and you treasure the things of God, you treasure the things that God takes pleasure in, you will be satisfied like no other. You will be satisfied by sovereignty. And this means that the treasures in your life can then be maximized for his glory and for your good.